supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Pennsylvania Democratic U.S. Senator Bob Casey's road to re-election next November will be tested by whoever emerges from a crowded field of Republican rivals, and that now includes Congressman and former Hazleton, Pennsylvania Mayor Lou Barletta. Let's consider the possibilities with Penn Live opinion editor and political columnist John Micek. John, welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight.
Dave, thanks for having me.
Let's see, of the 6 Republican rivals so far, I presume Barletta is the one with name recognition.
Dave, you're absolutely correct. Barletta is the candidate with the biggest name recognition in the race. He's been a fixture of state politics for 2 decades now. Very controversial mayor of Hazleton, sort of an anonymous backbencher in Congress for his 2 terms there, although he did claim statewide recognition last fall by becoming one of the very first Republicans to back Donald Trump's presidential bid, and he ran Pennsylvania's campaign for him.
And it seems reciprocal already. President Trump has signaled that he, in turn, will back Barletta.
That's absolutely right. We know that Barletta has been approached by people in the Trump White House about running. The president himself has spoken favorably of Barletta, albeit he said that he was running for governor but not for Senate. But hey, you know, details. Putting in that early legwork with the White House certainly would pay off for him.
The obvious question, is it a plus or a liability to hitch your wagon to President Donald Trump?
Right now, considering that you are more popular than President Donald Trump in some parts of the country, David, it might be a liability. Pennsylvania, remember, went narrowly for Donald Trump last year, 48-47% over Democrat Hillary Clinton. You know, Trump is reviled in some parts of the state, but in that vast red middle that Barletta represents, he still remains fairly popular.
Though certainly not all, and I'm wondering if even most Republicans agree with the tenets that Barletta espoused. It was in 2006 when he put forth the ordinance allowing his city, Hazleton, to deny a business permit to employers hiring illegal immigrants. He also gave the city authority to fine landlords for leasing to illegal immigrants, and it also made English the official language of Hazleton. Certainly not all Republicans embrace that plan.
Oh, absolutely not. You know, you get down into the southeastern part of the state where there are the more moderate Republicans still flourish and have a great deal of strength. That is not a message that resonates with them. And that, in fact, is where Barletta could run into some trouble. There's Paul Addis, who's a successful businessman from that neck of the woods, and Jeffrey Bartos, another very strong and well-funded businessman from Montgomery County, whose message might actually resonate with Republicans down there.
So let's look at the numbers. Casey does enjoy a huge advantage based on name recognition, war chest, and looking back over time, the incumbent typically prevails.
That's absolutely right. I actually pulled the campaign finance reports. Bob Casey is sitting on something like $5 million in his campaign war chest right now. One of the great challenges in knocking off an incumbent is that you have to provide a compelling narrative for why he should be gotten rid of. That's always a challenge, particularly in a midterm year where the president's party traditionally does not do particularly well. Casey also, after being sort of somnolent for his first 2 terms, has discovered his inner angry guy and has become a very vocal presence on the national scene criticizing the Trump White House. During the Obamacare debate, he was tweeting regularly about the deleterious effects that repeal could have on Pennsylvania.
And already, the Democrats in Pennsylvania are taking aim at Barletta's vote to repeal and replace Obamacare.
Oh, absolutely. That is something that Barletta is going to have to explain. It was something that was not particularly popular here in Pennsylvania, where the state added something like 500,000 people to the Medicaid rolls because of the Medicaid expansion. You even had Barletta's fellow Republican, Charlie Dent, the Republican from the 15th District up in Allentown, who was expressing reservations about the repeal plan. You know, it's something that he's going to have to do a lot of explaining about.
Though co-opting the president's slogan, Barletta apparently wants to make Pennsylvania great again. What form would that take?
That is going to be up to Mr. Barletta to articulate. I would not presume to speak on his behalf, but I mean, we do know that he's a pro-small business kind of guy. He's a pro-tax cut kind of guy, a very hard line on immigration. I guess to him, that would constitute making Pennsylvania great again, if I'm going to use that construction.
Apparently, Lou Barletta hinted a while back that he would at least consider what he has now declared, that he'll run for that race. 6 Republicans. Is the field closed or too early to say?
It's still fairly early days right now, but the other, you know, the other five, with the exception of Mr. Bardos, are going to run into the traditional challenge that everyone has when they want to run statewide. That's raising their name recognition and raising the kind of money that they're going to need to compete statewide in what could end up being a crowded Republican primary field. Jeff Bardos has about $1 million on hand through his first 3 months in the campaign. I'm sure Paul Addis have not pulled his numbers, but he'll be able to raise some money. You have a couple of Republican state House members and sort of two more smaller people, a borough councilman, I think, and some sort of local businessman who will, they will certainly have trouble raising money. Pennsylvania is a big state, and the way to raise your profile statewide is to get onto TV, and TV is expensive.
John, thanks once again for shedding light.
Dave, anytime.
Penn Live opinion editor and political columnist John Micek. Philadelphia has dedicated its first protected bike lane, though a city councilwoman is stirring up controversy. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports that she's promising council hearings in the fall.
The protected bike lane reorganizes Chestnut Street between 45th and 33rd. Instead of only paint, a row of parking separates bike traffic from cars and trucks. It moves on-street parking over, so it's between the regular lanes and the bike-only one. The new arrangement is supposed to be permanent, but City Councilwoman Jenny Blackwell made this pronouncement at the dedication.
I'd like to make it a trial basis for 3 months to see how it works. We want to be fair. My first obligation is, of course, to the people who put me here.
Mike Carroll, a deputy managing director overseeing the project, says there's nothing temporary about it.
It's an infrastructure project. It's not a trial or a pilot. And we've been in communication with the councilwoman's office from, you know, the very beginning. I think what she's getting is sort of the anxiety that people have when something's new. And we always understood that this was going to take some getting used to.
Neighborhood resident Maurice Jones favors the new lane, but understands it's caused some issues.
I know there are some concerns and some angst in the neighborhood concerning it, but as you grow in the city, it's important to understand that change sometimes can be contentious, but change can be good for the city.
However, Councilwoman Blackwell, who represents parts of West Philadelphia, says she wants to make sure neighbors have a say in this and all future bike lanes.
What I want to do is put in legislation when we go back September 14th calling for an ordinance to be passed to do this around the city. Because right now, if a streets department decides they want to do it, they move to do it. And they get support. And that's fine, but the other side has to have its say as well. We want to be fair. So I intend on putting in legislation that calls for you to do a city ordinance to have this happen anywhere in the city.
Mayor Jim Kenney says some people don't adapt well to anything new.
This kind of change is difficult from people. And this is an older city with things that being done the way they've been done for a long, long time. We are still a car-centric society in Philadelphia, and other cities have come along further than we have. And everyone needs to be able to share the space safely. And then I think that's the main goal.
Councilwoman Blackwell still considers the issue temporary. When asked if she would try to end the Chestnut Street lane, she said she'll make a decision after 90 days. Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
Early intervention is crucial for good outcomes when it comes to autism, though some insurers balk at the cost. Researchers at the University of Pennsylvania found that kids who went through an expensive, though high-quality program, saw real cost savings over time. For WHYY's Behavioral Health Desk, Anne Hoffman explains.
For years, researchers have speculated that if kids on the autism spectrum got early intervention, they would likely improve so much that they wouldn't need as many services down the line. David Mandel, the director of Penn Center for Mental Health Policy and Services Research, says needing fewer services yields real savings. For families, they avoid co-pays and out-of-pocket costs. For school systems, it costs less money because the students can spend more time in mainstream classrooms. But scientists thought it would take decades to realize these cost savings. Mandel and his team analyzed data from another study in Washington State and found that it didn't take that long.
What our study finds is that within 2 years, high-quality early intervention has returned its investment in that these children are functioning well enough that they don't need many of the expensive services that we often deliver to young children with autism.
When he says high-quality early intervention, he's talking about what's called the Early Start Denver model. It's evidence-based and can make things more expensive when early intervention already costs $40,000 to $80,000 a year. But Mandel says the Denver model isn't widely available, so to fill the gap, he says community-based programs could invest in highly skilled employees to offer it. But that depends on buy-in from early intervention programs and insurance companies. Ann Hoffman, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.